right.
Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
It's cozy season, and nothing compares to wrapping yourself in a Minky Couture blanket. Luxuriously soft. Perfectly warm. Thoughtfully made. From movie nights to chilly mornings, Minky Couture turns everyday moments into pure comfort. Once you feel it, you'll understand why it's called the original best blanket ever. Visit MinkyCouture.com or a store near you and make this cozy season your softest one yet.
Hey, Martin Sharp, the Fit for Business, Fit for Life coach here, and I hope you're going to enjoy this next amazing episode of Road to Rediscovery by the amazing Aubrey Johnson. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on the Road to Rediscovery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. Otherwise, if you listen on any other platform, we also encourage you to send us an email with your thoughts and feedback at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com, and we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. My special guest is an eating disorder recovery coach who truly, truly has a heart for service. She helps her clients navigate through anorexia and other eating disorders using compassion, empathy, transparency, and unconditional love. Let's welcome Julia Trehane to the show. Hey, Julia, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It's absolutely amazing to be here. I'm so pleased. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. We're equally honored to have you on. So Julia, can we start off by just, if you can give us a glimpse, right, into your journey and what led to your inspiration behind you pursuing this type of work and helping others through this illness?
Sure, yeah. I lived in anorexia for 40 years. It started when I was very, very young. In fact, one of my earliest memories is being about 4 years old. And there was another little girl who was also called Julia who played in our road with me. Mm-hmm. And she was a week younger than me. And so she was known as Little Julia and I was known as Big Julia. Mm. But although I didn't really know about body size then, and I wasn't actually big, I was just a week older, it felt wrong and it felt bad. And I remember not liking being called Big Julia. And I used to say, I'm not Big Julia. I don't want to be Big Julia.
Yeah.
And that was sort of like one of my earliest memories of not being happy with my body size. And I also had a difficult relationship with my father, who was, I'm sure he was only doing what he knew and the best he could do with the knowledge he had and his own conditioning. He was a highly, highly critical and judgmental man. And I couldn't ever do right. I was never quite good enough. And I tried to stay out of his way a lot of the time. And I realized sort of towards the age of 9 or 10 that the smaller I was, the less I was seen. And the other thing he was really strict about was not sharing emotions. I wasn't allowed to cry. I wasn't allowed to make a fuss. And in fact, if I cried, I was told, if you don't stop crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about.
Oh, wow.
I know, but it was actually quite common then. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he really meant harm by it. But when I started to realise that the smaller I was, the less I was seen, I started trying to eat less. And this had the welcome side effect of restricting my emotions. I didn't really feel as much and I didn't need to feel. So by the time I was sort of 11, 12, I kind of developed into full-blown anorexia. Mm. But I felt like I was winning. I felt like I didn't have to feel, I didn't have to eat.
Yeah.
And I was managing to stay small and out of his way, which felt just incredible. Mm-hmm. And it also felt a bit like a superpower. The whole feeling empty thing felt really powerful.
Yeah.
And kind of addictive. And I sort of carried on like this. I realized that I would get in a lot of trouble if they found out.
Right.
So I wore lots and lots of jumpers and things and used to make excuses at school as to why in PE I had to wear a tracksuit. And I would fake notes to my parent, to the school for my parents saying that I couldn't participate in PE for this reason and that reason.
Right.
Yeah. By the time I was 15, the school had kind of had enough of my excuses and made me do PE normally in normal PE kit with the rest of the class. And that kind of revealed that I was pretty undernourished and phone calls went home and doctors were called and it all just kind of went horrible for a while. And I was forced to weight restore. But my parents were also going through a pretty messy divorce at the time as well.
I see.
There was a recession on and they couldn't sell the house. And so it was all a bit of a scrappy, yucky time. And so they didn't. They were kind of really involved in their own issues. So although I started eating, it was still quite restrictive and there was no healing mentally at all.
No.
I left home at 16 and kind of breathed a sigh of relief. It was a lot easier when I wasn't at home and things were pretty good. I was trying to balance paying rent and still going to school and having part-time work and stuff. And I was just kind of too busy to be worrying about food. So I was eating, but it was still quite restricted. I only ate certain things. And at 18, I met my husband and things were really good then for a while. I was still restricting, but I felt safe. I felt okay. I wasn't afraid to be seen. I still was pretty emotionless. And I had some children. And my first son had anaphylaxis to egg, which is a life-threatening allergy. And we had to carry an EpiPen and everything. And this made me really, really obsessive about what he was eating because it could kill him.
Right, right.
I took it so far. I became crazy obsessive about preparing everything from scratch, making sure nothing that could hurt him. And I got to the, like, everything had to be like clean eating and no processed food. I took it really, really far, far, far more than I needed to. And so that sort of became more restrictive. And then when I'd had my, well, I got pregnant with my third child and I was restricting quite a lot more then. And I'd also discovered exercise. And so I was exercising a lot. I had him like 9 o'clock in the morning and I was home by lunchtime and I went for a run and then I did the school run for the other two and then I was walking the dogs and I was just like really, really on the go. I didn't rest at all having had a baby that day. Back in my jeans in 3 days, which everyone praised me for and validated me for and said, oh, wow, you're amazing and how do you do it all, you're like superwoman.
Yeah.
This just praised the behavior and made it like, wow, this is making me look amazing. People love it and I must be doing really, really well. So that just kind of carried on, this just existence of restriction, exercise, restriction, exercise.
Yeah.
I was always following the latest like fad and craze of a keto diet and excuse the phone ringing.
Oh, that's it. That's okay.
Keto diet, and then I discovered intermittent fasting, which is just right. The most wonderful thing if you've got anorexia, because it means you don't have to eat at all, and you can just tell people, "Oh, I'm fasting."
Ah, I see. I see. So interesting.
Greatest excuse not to eat, and it meant that I also didn't have to tell all the lies that I used to have to tell people all the time, saying, "Oh, I've eaten at so and so's," or "I had this, so I'm not hungry now." And this just carried on, and I was just existing in this tense, people-pleasing, perfectionistic, OCD restricted world. Never really feeling happy. My children used to tell me I had a heart of stone, and
really,
yeah.
Oh my!
I was the mum at the school things where all the other mums were crying because it was so lovely that their children were singing these songs when they left the primary school and things, and I was there dry eyed,
looking at your watch. No, I'm kidding.
And in lockdown, my father died.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. And it brought back, kind of brought to the surface all those restricted emotions from my childhood, all the ones I've never felt, I've never processed. And I felt like I was spinning completely out of control. I didn't know what to do. So my answer to this was to restrict more. So I did, and it didn't work. And so I restricted more and more and more until I just completely stopped eating. And I got really sick really, really fast. Like, I was kicked out of my gym because I kept passing out. I would like go out on a run and then sort of like find myself, or somebody would find me passed out on the ground.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah, you had no fuel and you're exercising.
No, I was exercising for at least 8 hours a day at this point.
Oh my.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Ready to make your money work smarter? Kraken is the crypto platform trusted by over 13 million people worldwide. With Kraken, you can instantly buy and sell crypto, power up your trades with advanced tools, and get 24/7 support from real humans anytime you need help. Kraken has been around for more than 14 years and was voted the best crypto exchange of 2025 by Forbes. Getting started is simple. Create an account, fund it, and place your first trade. Start today at kraken.com.
I was just trying to stop these thoughts just spinning, and I really, really thought I was going mad. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to manage them. Mm-hmm. And that mask that you can put on at the end of the day when people come home from school and work that pretends you're okay, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't stop the feelings. I couldn't pretend I was okay. And I was so weak. I had to stop work because I just couldn't do it anymore. And I got to the point where I just didn't know what to do. I couldn't see a future. I couldn't see what to do. And I decided that literally the world would just be so much better if I wasn't in it, because I didn't know how to carry on.
Oh my.
And I got everything together to take my life. And I was literally, I set aside a time and I was just about to do it and nobody was here. And something inside me, and I think it's a part of me that's a mum, said, "No, don't be so selfish. You can't leave this legacy to your children. This is the worst thing you could ever do. They don't deserve that. They can't have that hanging over their futures."
Right.
And I just broke down and I asked for help. And it was the first time I'd wanted help. I'd always thought that admitting I needed help was a weakness. And I never realized that sharing any vulnerability was strong. I thought that was an absolute weakness.
Amazing. It sounds like you had this, like this really life-defining, pivotal moment when you started to consider maybe the world would be better without me. Then you thought about the legacy you were leaving your children, and that seemed to really take hold of you, you know, in terms of coming to terms that you need help. And now you originally thought the act of needing help meant weakness. Mm-hmm. Now, at the moment you were actually considering getting help, what was your thoughts regarding weakness? Did you still feel that it was weakness, or did you believe it was weakness and just put it aside and said, you know what, it is weakness, but I need this? Or did you just all of a sudden realize, hey, it's not weakness, this is something I truly need to do?
Oh, no, I didn't realize that. I thought I was a complete failure.
Okay.
I hated every aspect of myself. I just thought I was completely worthless. Mm. But I do have some absolutely incredible friends who dragged me to see a therapist, mm-hmm. Who kind of helped a bit, but she wasn't really specialized in eating disorders. And by this time, my husband was like much more aware of what was going on, because he hadn't known me without an eating disorder. So he thought my behavior was pretty normal.
I see.
And he's also a farmer. And so that was our harvest season. So he was out all the time.
Right.
I was like at my lowest point. And so we didn't really see much of each other. So he found out what was going on, and being a man and wanting to fix, which is of what course. He likes to do.
Right, right.
Like, okay, I don't know what to do. I'm going to book a holiday.
Right, right.
So to take me away and help me relax and just take me away from real life, mm-hmm. which I didn't want to go. I was really scared. I was living in total fear all the time. I was so anxious. But I did go, and it wasn't the worst idea in the world. It did give mm-hmm. me a break from reality and mm-hmm. allowed me time to start researching how I could get out of this, how I could recover.
I see. I see. What was it you were afraid of, Julia?
Everything. I was just in fear of everything. I was scared of talking to people because I didn't think I had anything worthwhile to say. I thought they'd just hate me. I hated how I looked because I thought I was like grossly overweight, when in fact I was incredibly underweight.
I see.
I just thought everybody hated me.
Oh, wow. And part of this stemmed, as you said earlier, from your interaction and relationship with your father, right?
I never was good enough. No, I was kind of born not good enough. Uh-huh. And it was not helped by the fact that my brother was good enough because he was a boy.
Yes, I understand.
So it kind of felt worse because why was he good enough and I wasn't? What was wrong with being a girl? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't even know you could like yourself. And I certainly had never heard of self-love. I thought that was arrogance.
I see. And so, that does not help when not only is he very judgmental, and I guess his set of expectations seem so far out of reach, in his relationship with you, but here's your sibling over here where he can't do any wrong in his father's eyes. And to me, that just kind of adds insult to injury, so to speak. And so, with not eating and becoming smaller, did you find that it fulfilled something from a self-esteem standpoint, or did it just not hurt as bad from your father's judging, when you became smaller?
A bit of both, actually.
Okay.
it hurt less because I didn't feel as much.
Right.
But with diet culture and societal ideals on body shape and body size and stuff, I got a lot of validation for being so thin. And people were like, oh, you're amazing, you're so thin, and you can, because at the time it was like models were like waifs, like the heroin kind of look.
Yes.
So healthy. So I kind of was at the societal ideal, the waif-like look. And so I did get a lot of validation from that, because I had no internal self-worth. That did give me some self-worth.
Right, right.
And also people would say, oh, isn't it amazing how you can... I spent loads of time baking all the time. I was feeding people, but never myself. And they're like, oh, you make all this food and you can resist it. You're so amazing. And so I got lots of validation for that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, society does really validate eating disorders. It's really, really sad.
Yeah, that's, it's sad and can be quite tragic at times.
It's very damaging. You know,
I feel absolutely, absolutely. So Julia, so now if we can kind of get back to returning from holidays. And now returning from holidays gave you some time to try to figure this thing out. You know, how can I get over this this behavior problem, this psychological problem, this neurological problem, you know, with this eating disorder? What next steps do you take in pursuit of that? And then how does that, after, you know, helping yourself recover, how does that transition to the role you're doing now in helping others recover?
Okay, so there's a few parts of this. I came back from holiday and I went to the doctor. And over here we have the NHS. And they referred me to eating disorder services. And the wait for that, just for an initial assessment, is about 2.5 years. So that wasn't really going to be any help, because the state I was in and how my body was, I didn't have 2.5 years of life left in me.
Oh, wow. I see.
I was.
You need something now. Yes. Okay.
So I'd been doing lots of research and listening to lots of podcasts. And I heard this amazing woman on a podcast talking about her own recovery. And talking about self-love. That was such an alien concept to me, because I hated myself. I hated everything about myself. And something about her just really drew me in. And everything she said, I just resonated with. And so I contacted her. And she's a recovery coach. And she took me on as a client and literally loved me to recovery. She showed me how to have compassion for myself, to be like, I'm not a bad person, I'm ill, and that's okay, because everyone gets ill. And my past is not my fault, but it is my responsibility to change my future. And so I had several months of working with her, and really, because I had nothing left to lose, because I'd hit rock bottom and I was unable to work, I wasn't able to go to the gym. I was too weak to do much but lie on the sofa by this point. I just went completely all in. I did absolutely everything she asked of me. I did all the soul work, and recovery became my full-time job. When I started to come out the other side, life was, it had gone from like living in a black and white cage of, I suppose, my own making.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This episode sponsored by HealthyCell. HealthyCell is different than typical supplements because it's a gel, not pills. HealthyCell uses microgel technology, which is clinically proven to absorb 165% better than traditional pills. That means your body actually uses the nutrients, so you can feel the difference. And instead of swallowing a handful of vitamins, one great-tasting gel pack can replace up to 18 pills. Healthy cell formulas are created by physicians and nutritionists to support energy, focus, immune health, and overall wellness. If you're going to take vitamins, they should actually work. Healthy cell, reach your potential.
I didn't feel.
And yes.
What I hadn't known is because I didn't allow myself to feel any negative feelings. I never actually felt positive ones either. And even things like with my husband, although I intellectually knew he loved me,
right.
I didn't know you could feel love.
So you felt quite numb,
yeah.
Actually. Interesting. Okay.
And so when I started to be nourished and really doing the soul work and started to learn how to feel feelings,
yes,
which actually isn't anywhere near as frightening as the fear of feeling the feelings.
Sure.
So yeah, feeling the feelings isn't as scary as fearing feeling the feelings.
Yes. Yes. That makes sense. I had to think about that for a second. But yeah, I understand where you're coming from now.
Yeah. And I started to learn to love myself and to love who I was. And I realized that I had value. And I started to feel love, joy, excitement, happiness. And the whole world went from this black and white cage to like I was surfing a rainbow.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And I never knew you could feel such joy that you could wake up in the morning feeling excited for your day ahead.
Yes. Yes.
And this just was so poignant to me and so, so important that everybody needs to have a chance to feel this.
Yes.
That I did all coaching qualifications and stuff and started recovery coaching myself because although there are some incredible people in eating disorder services and stuff, and they really do help, it's a really strange thing to get your head around that somebody is scared of food. That's like saying, I'm scared of breathing.
Right.
It's something that you have to keep yourself alive.
Exactly.
But I was scared of it.
Yeah, sure.
And so if you haven't had an eating disorder, it's really hard to get your head around what it feels like. You can do all the book learning in the world, but if you haven't felt the fear, haven't felt the feelings, or haven't heard the eating disorder voice screaming in your head, then it's really hard to kind of really connect with people that are trying to get out of an eating disorder. And so I use my lived experience and my compassion and my empathy and my love for people to help them recover. And I absolutely love it. It's so fulfilling.
That is absolutely wonderful, Julia. One key thing you said that really resonated with me was the whole revelation that you had. It was like a breakthrough of you know, being able to love and feeling love, feeling that you're not just giving love but receiving love, and thinking that everyone should have this feeling, everyone should deserves to feel this way, and that seemed to be one of the key components that has driven you to this certification, to where you can be the recovery coach for people with this eating disorders to feel what you felt, right?
Everyone deserves to feel happy.
Yes, yes. And you've reflected quite a bit on your own journey and struggles. And I'm sure you've applied learning from those lessons, as well as your certification, you know, training.
Probably more from my own life experience.
Is that right?
More than any certification.
Really?
Yeah.
Extraordinary. Absolutely extraordinary. Because as you said, you can have all the book smarts and all the book learning, but unless you have actually gone through feeling the depth of what someone with an eating disorder or illness feels, you would never really know.
No, it's because it makes no logical sense.
Right. No, it doesn't. And at some point, there has to be some degree of self-awareness that as a coach, you help your clients come to that realization of, you know, having the presence of mind of knowing where they are, what their circumstances are, and you know, start to think about what they need to do to move in a more healthy, productive direction. What kind of role does self-awareness play in coaching and guiding your clients through this illness?
A huge amount. Once you're aware of a problem, you can start to find a solution. But if you're not aware that there's a problem there, it's really hard to find a solution. Self-awareness is huge. And so is learning to have self-compassion.
I see. And accountability would play a role in there as well.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
Gotcha. So
with my coaching, we have like the weekly Zoom sessions, but there's unlimited WhatsApp support, which is full accountability and also celebration, celebrating every win, because our brains are wired for reward.
Yes.
And instead of the negative, I'm rubbish, I'm this, it's if you can celebrate the wins, you want to repeat them. It's like giving a child a sticker chart.
Absolutely. We're wired to learn by association.
Yeah.
And And if it's something that we do that we get rewarded for or that makes us feel good, then, you know, we want to gravitate towards that more frequent, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Learning that fear is actually a lesson, that fear is something, it means that there's something you can learn and grow from.
Yes. Yes.
And that was a huge turning point.
Oh, I bet that was a very huge turning point. I mean, instead of running away from fear, it kind of helps you maybe embrace it a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Man, that's great. So are there any societal distractions? You mentioned that earlier, but let's say, like you said, society rewards for being thin or small, skinny, or, you know, not eating for long periods of time. And that's unfortunately a societal type of norm that is conveyed upon people, whether they have eating disorders or not. But with your clients and guiding them through recovery, are there any societal distractions outside of those norms which, you know, may have encouraged them to have that lifestyle? What are some societal distractions that that your clients may have while trying to recover that could be a potential detriment to their efforts?
There's things like, I don't know if you have it there, in the UK we now have calories on the menus in restaurants.
Some restaurants we do,
which is awful. It's absolutely terrible. That's that's really hard to cope with, going to a restaurant and having that. So that's very difficult. People just talking about diets and weight, and people commenting. When people comment on somebody else's body or what they're eating, A, they shouldn't do it. We've got no business doing that.
Right.
All bodies are beautiful. whatever size they are, whatever shape they are, whatever color they are, whatever yes. ability they are.
Yes.
Because they see us through our lives.
Yes.
And we shouldn't be ashamed of them. So yeah, thoughtless comments
okay.
on what people eat and yeah. how much they weigh. And there's also, particularly for people that live in larger bodies, there's also some real restrictions like airline seats and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which is so wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that can be very difficult. And there's also a lot of people with eating disorders don't believe that they're sick enough to get help, because there's this image of the skeletal, tiny frame of the anorexic, and that's what people hold in their heads. But you can have an eating disorder in any size body, and you can be dangerously ill with an eating disorder in any size body.
Yes. Yes.
And so a lot of people are prevented from getting help, or even they ask for help and they go to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, your BMI is not low enough. And so they mm-hmm. don't get help. And that makes them sicker, because they then try and get to the low BMI so that they can get help.
Yes. I was about to ask if the BMIs were recognized in the UK.
Yeah.
How outdated is that? I mean, because I know, in the United States it's different, because I do believe, quite honestly, the United States is the country that has the most overweight citizens, people, because of how much consumption of processed foods happens in the United States. I truly believe that, and I've seen it on several documentaries. Even still with that, right, the body mass index, the BMI, based on height, weight, size, you're given a number, and that number is telling you whether it's within that BMI range for your height and weight or outside of the range. And in a lot of people's cases, it's above and outside the range based on their height and their weight. But there's so many other dimensions and variables and factors in a person's makeup that there's got to be some exceptions. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Health, well, first of all, BMI, am I allowed to swear on your podcast?
Sure.
BMI is bullshit, misunderstood information.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, or that's what it stands for. Okay.
And it was created by some man many years ago for insurance purposes, and it was designed for white American males. Mm. And that was literally the category it was designed for. And it had no medical background at all. Mm-hmm. And it was adopted by the medical field as something that people should be measured by. And that's not what it was designed for in the first place at all.
I see. Wow.
With the fact that there are people in bigger bodies that do inhibit them in developed countries. Mm-hmm, and some countries have this more than others.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually diet culture and the medical field that have created this by saying that we have to fit this certain standard, because I'm getting on my high horse now. Our bodies have a set weight range that they will fight to stay at.
Yes.
And it's a bit like dogs. You wouldn't compare a Chihuahua to a Great Dane.
Right.
They're all dogs, but they're in different sized bodies. Mm. And people are meant to come in different shapes and sizes. And we don't try and alter our height. We don't try and alter our foot size. But we try and alter our weight. And every time you go on a diet, yes, sure, you might lose weight initially.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you go into the hellhole of an eating disorder, most people cannot sustain a diet. No. And when they stop the diet, their body will bring them back to their set point range.
Yes.
Plus a bit.
Yes.
Because the
yes.
body always adds on a bit
mm-hmm.
to prepare for the next perceived famine. Your body does not feel safe. So every time you diet, you will gain more back. And that's a huge reason why there are so many people in bigger bodies, because they've spent all these years yo-yo dieting. Even with foods, so even if you're not physically restricting, if you are eating foods and shaming yourself for doing so and saying, I shouldn't be having this extra piece of cake, this is really bad, I should have more willpower, then your brain doesn't know what's real and what's not. And so that is restriction. And so your body, your biological defenses, because your body just wants to keep you alive, it will make you want to eat more because it thinks you're restricting.
Amazing. Absolutely fascinating. And I just couldn't articulate it the way you did, Julia, but I always felt like whenever I went on a diet, you know, I got results, but as soon as I stopped, it was that return back to that set number, that set size, you know. It was a return back and then some, as you mentioned earlier, you know.
Our bodies are amazing. They know what to do. When you need a wee, you go for a wee, right?
Yeah.
When you need to yawn, you yawn. When you need to stretch, you stretch. Mm-hmm. When you're thirsty, you have a drink.
Yeah.
So why don't people trust their bodies when they're hungry? Our bodies know what they're doing.
They do so much.
We just need to trust them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, it's just the beautiful way God made our bodies, you know, just like how we have the antibodies in our system to fight off infection and cold, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also, I mean, our bodies, they're incredible and they allow us to do so many things, but they don't define who we are.
No.
We are not what our bodies look like at all.
So true. So true. Oh, this is, Julia, this is fascinating. I mean, I could talk with you for hours about this. Let's talk about your podcast. Tell us a little bit about Fly to Freedom, Healing from an Eating Disorder.
Oh, yes. Well, it's just, it's a way of me helping raise awareness that so many women particularly, but men as well, have lived kind of like, I suppose, a functional alcoholic. They have lived in a functional eating disorder for so long. And they just think that's their way of life and that it's too late to change. They're too old. There's no hope. This is just how it is now and they just have to suffer. And it's not true.
No.
Anyone can recover from an eating disorder and fully recover and live an incredible, happy future. And so I'm just like on a mission to raise awareness. And I'm doing that through partly through my podcast where I share my story. I interview guests on their stories.
Okay. Yeah.
What they've done. I just had a brilliant interview with a young man who struggled with an eating disorder, and he's a nutritionist, but he's also very, very into fitness, and the fitness industry has a lot of eating disorders and disordered eating within it, and body dysmorphia and exercise addiction. And so he's devised a program to help people eat intuitively and exercise to feel good, not to punish themselves and not to try and manipulate their bodies.
Right.
Because exercise and moving our bodies should feel good. We should do it for pleasure and for strength, to keep us going, because we do all need our muscles to work well. I interview some great guests. I also do solo podcasts about the lies our eating disorder tells us. Are you sick enough? Strange behaviors within an eating disorder. And just try and show people that they're not alone and that there is a way out. Because I just so truly believe that anyone can recover. And it's also a lot about self-love, because we were born loving ourselves. At our hearts, we are pure love. And babies and toddlers, they love their bodies. They run around, they gaze in awe and wonder at their hands and feet, and they rub their little tummies with joy and jiggle them, and they absolutely love it.
Right.
That's what we were designed to do. We were born loving ourselves and loving our bodies. Mm-hmm. So returning to that self-love that is our birthright is hugely important. And I do talk a lot about that in my podcast.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Sounds like an amazing podcast with great, great conversations with your awesome guests. That is just fascinating, Julia. How can the listeners learn more about your great work and subscribe to your podcast?
Well, my podcast is on pretty much all the platforms, and it's called Fly to Freedom. I also post regularly on Instagram, which is at Julia Trehane, and lots of tips and things on there. I have a website, which is juliatrehane.com. And I also offer people who would like to recover but don't know if coaching is the right thing for them, because coaching is quite new in eating disorders.
So I
offer people a week's trial to see if they feel that coaching is good for them, and to see whether they're good for coaching.
Yeah, I
do that as well.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. You know, I am more than happy to include that in the episode show notes.
Thank you.
The link to your podcast, the link to your website, and the language you just mentioned, you know, about someone who wants to have a trial in this type of coaching, because it is new to the coaching space, newer than others, right? So if you're willing, I'm more than happy to include that in the episode show notes as well, Julia.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We will definitely do that. And again, I really, really enjoyed having you come on the show and share your insights and give us a nice transparent glimpse into your journey and your struggles, right? Which led to who you are today, the heart for service you have, and the great care and compassion you have for helping other people come to the revelation that you've come to of being happy and loving and being loved. So Julia, thanks once again for coming on.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute honor, and thank you for helping me to raise awareness of this.
Oh, absolutely. Likewise. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And hey, look, if you have a loved one who may not seem to be themselves, a coworker, a friend, relative, a neighbor, they're just going through dark days of despair, not quite sure where to go or who to turn to, I humbly ask that you please share this show with them, because on the road to rediscovery, we want our listeners to know two things. Number one, you're not alone. And number two, there is hope. The road to rediscovery, it's a movement, a revolution. And guess what? You are now part of it. We're all roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
IP Vanish protects every device you own. Your phone, your laptop, your smart TV, if it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. And with no device limits, one account covers everything. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at IPVanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish.